What is going on, crypto family? So today we've got an awesome interview with a TEDx speaker, Joe Rogan guest, and CEO of Singularity Net, Ben Gurzel. So we dive into this guy's brilliant mind and discuss a ton of different things. I encourage you to listen to the entire interview because we discuss basically how he intends to have AI change our world and our lives, thoughts on Bitcoin, Libra, and Facebook, running the Sophia robot project, his awesome hat that he wears. You got to find out what kind it is, actually. It's actually kind of cool. His DMT experiences. That's right, DMT. Whether he's going to storm Area 51, people that he admires, time travel, basically like AI taking over the world, what Singularity Net intends to bring to the world, and so much more. It was a great time talking with Ben. I hope you enjoy. So let's go check it out. I'll catch you on the other side. What is going on, crypto family? So today we have the one and only Ben Gurzel with us. He is the CEO of Singularity.net. So really appreciate you taking time for us to enlighten us on all the cool stuff that you're doing, AI and all that kind of cool stuff. And I know it's 11 o'clock at night there where you're at. So appreciate you coming on in the wee hours of the morning for us.
No, thanks a lot. This is going to be good fun. I've enjoyed your podcast.
I appreciate you, brother. Yeah. So before we dive too deep into AI, man, we have some, the really hard questions, man. You know, the ones that everybody wants to know, right? So Star Trek or Star Wars, man? Which one do you like more?
I grew up on Star Trek, the original Star Trek in the late 60s when I was like a tiny baby. So that was truly influential on me.
I love it. Did you see Independence Day? I think it was like the one with Will Smith, 1996. It had Data from Star Trek Generations.
You know, I did. A really, really long time ago when my first batch of kids were little, we saw that. Yeah, there was some big explosions there. That's it.
You kind of remind me of the guy that's working at Area 51 that has, Brent Spiner. He's Data from Star Trek, but he's in Independence Day. He's got the long hair. He's got, he looks like he's, doing all kinds of cool stuff there behind the scenes that, nobody else knows about except Area 51. You kind of have that vibe.
Yeah, we have a number of space aliens on staff at SingularityNet, but I'm not at liberty to discuss that in too much depth, right?
That's awesome, man. I'm digging the shirt. It looks like it's a skull with the U.S. dollar on it. Is that what I'm looking at there?
There we go. Yeah.
That is definitely something like Ron Paul or G. Edward Griffin would definitely do. Have you ever read the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island with Dr. G. Edward Griffin?
No, I've not.
Oh, wow. Well, you're going to have to stop programming for a day and just read that book then for sure.
Yeah, no, actually, the shirt reminds me of the cover of the Dead Kennedys album, In God We Trust Incorporated, back from the...
It's awesome, man. What's your favorite band?
I've been listening to Buckethead obsessively for a while now, but I grew up on Hendrix and Dylan and all that. And I was a huge Ween fan for a while, which that was all decades ago, though. But I like almost every kind of music. I'm a music fanatic.
Yeah, Hendrix and Dylan, the staples for sure. And so I'm digging the hat. The hat is awesome. You said it's rabbit fur. It looks like it's cheetah, but it's rabbit fur.
Yeah, that's right. It's fake cheetah fur, but it is actually rabbit fur. So you can feel sorry for the little rabbits that were killed in skins to make this hat.
What's the story behind the hat? I mean, there's got to be a story behind it.
Maybe you can make one up.
I just make one up, huh? All right.
I borrowed a hat somewhat like this, which was a zebra striped hat, and I happened to be filmed for the documentary Transcendent Man, which is about Ray Kurzweil, with a zebra striped cowboy hat on. Then I returned that hat to the guy who loaned it to me. But then after that, people kept asking me, where is the hat? I could never find a high quality zebra striped cowboy hat, but then I randomly saw this one in a store somewhere. I'm like, look, what the hell? It's spots, not stripes. But actually, I like this one. Like this one even better. I'm looking forward to being able to clone rabbit fur in the future, so we don't have to slaughter little rabbits for our decorations.
Yeah, but would the keychain still be lucky then? You see those rabbits, the little rabbit feet, the keychain.
I think it's luckier. That's right.
Definitely luckier for the rabbit, man. So.
Right.
Awesome, man. So tell us about yourself, man. What's your background a little bit?
Professionally, I mean, I have a PhD in mathematics, and I was an academic for 8 years in math, computer science, cognitive science. I was in Australia and New Zealand, where I was a professor. Then been in the software industry for 20 plus years now, doing a lot of AI consulting work for big companies and government agencies, sort of for many years, just to bring in the bills around what I worked on, what I was really interested in my spare time, which was artificial general intelligence. So, I mean, my quest for the last 30 years has been to build machines that are as smart as people or even smarter than people. And that was a really obscure thing to be doing for most of these 30 years. Now suddenly it's become popular. Progress is fast, which is exciting and also scary, because not that I'm so scared of the Terminator slaughtering everyone or something. I'm more scared of nasty human beings controlling moderately advanced AIs and artificial general intelligences, AGIs. And, you know, that leads into what I see as the value of blockchain and decentralization and all that. Because if we're going to be building thinking machines that are getting smarter and smarter, so they're as smart as people, and then even smarter than people, I mean, we want these thinking machines not to be controlled by a few big governments or corporations, right? And that means we need to build them on a decentralized infrastructure. And, you know, blockchain is one of the tools that allows this to happen. And so that's why I got into the whole decentralized AI space. I'm like, shit, AI is getting real. We may be 5 or 10, 15 years, whatever, from machines that can really think like people. Who's going to own these things? Who's going to control these things? It better be the whole stinky mess of humanity as opposed to like one large company or one government. And that's what we're working toward with SingularityNet.
It's awesome, man. And so you've done a lot, right? So are you the lead, I guess, architect and developer is with Sophia as well? I met her in San Francisco.
I led the software team behind the Sophia robot for 3.5 years, and I was chief scientist of Hanson Robotics. So I didn't design the hardware and the sort of flexible rubberware of the plate, but the software that makes her see and hear and hold a conversation and move and so on. So I led the team behind that. I've stepped back from that this year, and I'm pretty much focusing on SingularityNet, but I still have my hand in with Hanson Robotics here and there. We're all based in Hong Kong, you know, and we're all good friends. And SingularityNet is close technology partners with Hanson Robotics. So we're aiming to use AI and SingularityNet now to make Sophia smarter and smarter.
It's pretty incredible. Yeah, I met her in San Francisco. It's pretty astonishing, you know, what she can do already. And I guess your vision for the future, where she's going to be, right? So you said 10, 15 years, they're going to be smarter than us.
Yeah, I mean, we want a robot like Sophia to really understand everything she's saying and to understand human beings. And I think that, I mean, such service robots in a commercial or home setting they'll be valuable in helping people with their lives and lucrative for businesses. But I think they also can serve a role of helping AI to learn more about human life and human by sharing everyday life with people. Then the AI will get a sense of what humanity is about, which otherwise it might not have, because an AI is going to be a very different kind of mind than a human being. But we want this alien mind that we're building to really understand us and empathize with us, right? And so that's really the point of creating these robots that can look you in the eye and smile and sort of build a bond with you.
Gotcha. And so right now what we're seeing mostly in, I guess, the AI or AGI space is mostly like governments and big corporations using it for like facial recognition and to basically get us to buy
them. What I think of is killing, spying, selling, and gambling, basically. I mean, if that's what's on the mind. Yeah. I mean, that's all good stuff, right? But if that's the only thing on the mind of the first superhuman thinking machine, it may end up being like a Hunter Thompson type thinking machine, which has some pluses and minuses. So I think we're not going to make those things go away. They're part of human society and human nature. But if we can get more like education, elder care, healthcare, science research, art, if we can get a broader spectrum of applications in there driving AI development, then I think as AI moves from narrow AI to general intelligence to super intelligence, we're going to be building a better form of super intelligence, right? And so this, in realizing this vision, I mean, there's a lot of different algorithms you need to integrate together. And this is where we came up with the idea of SingularityNet, which is a platform for taking many, many different AI algorithms and making it really easy to connect them together, and even so they can connect together themselves without human intervention. So like one AI that reads documents can consult another AI that understands images, or another AI that understands math, and the AIs can work together to solve problems. But this society of AI minds should be a participatory democracy of some sort, right? It shouldn't be just to maximize shareholder value, some specific company. So I mean, this is a perfect application for what Vitalik Buterin had called a world computer, right? Because otherwise it's going to run on the server farm of some big company or government agency. I mean, right now, Ethereum isn't really an efficient enough world computer to serve as the infrastructure for a superhuman thinking machine. But I think blockchain and related technologies are getting... they're getting better and better, and I'm confident we're going to see an infrastructure adequate for building an AI global brain, and we're getting started now.
That's awesome. So with Singularity.net, you basically are creating like a network to, I guess, kind of spread out the power of AI for the people versus putting it in the hands of just, you know, a few big corporations or governments, and so anybody and everybody can help contribute or utilize the technology there? Is that kind of
it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, as a... from a business view, SingularityNet is it's a dApp store, a decentralized app store for AI services. So it's like an API dApp store. Instead of buying a game or an app for your phone, basically if you're a business who needs AI, you can buy AI services via some APIs, some programming interfaces. But what makes it a little subtler is, you know, the apps on the app store on your phone aren't buying services from each other, right? They're just delivering to the end user. Whereas here, for the AI apps or dApps in the SingularityNet dApp store, the customers can be external users, which can be businesses, software that need AI services, or the customers can be each other, other dApps in the dApp store. And so what SingularityNet is, it's a platform that lets anyone in the world put an AI online. And then the AI announces it's there to the network. And then their AI is part of this like peer-to-peer society of AIs. If someone needs an AI service, like an image labeled, a question answered, you know, a math theorem proved, a data set analyzed, whatever it is, they pose that question to this whole peer-to-peer network. And then messages go out to find any AI that can do that thing. Then a price negotiation between the buyer and seller happens. But all this happens, you know, using peer-to-peer discovery, identity management, security, and coordination mechanisms, right? So, I mean, from a blockchain view, this is just one among many applications you can run on a decentralized world computer. And from an AI view, the blockchain is just there for decentralized control and governance. Like the actual AI thinking largely occurs off-chain, but the coordination of multiple different AI agents occurs on the blockchain.
It's pretty incredible. And so basically to make sure that, you know, Singularity.net has, you know, a long lifespan ahead of it, how is it going to, you know, pay for things? Is it just going to get a portion of the proceeds or whatever that bid ask is? Whenever there's some kind of transaction that happens in this network, do you guys get a cut of it? Because you guys got to pay bills, right?
At the moment, the economics doesn't work quite that way because it's more of a classic tokenomic system, but I think it's largely equivalent to that. I mean, there's an AGI token, which is a cryptographic token used for payment, and there's a finite supply of that AGI token. And so the more transactions there are in the network, just by nature, the higher the value of the AGI token will become, because you have a finite number of tokens and more processing going on. And then the SingularityNet Foundation, which runs the network, has some reserve AGI tokens of its own, which it can then utilized to cover its own expenses in various ways as it grows. But that's, I mean, if you do the math, it's kind of equivalent to charging a fee. It's like the distinction between inflating your currency or charging taxes if you're a national government, right? So, yeah, I think it will be interesting to see how all this evolves, though, right? Because really, in the whole crypto world, there's not really any large-scale practical services that are being offered yet. I mean, there are tokens that are used as, you know, stores of value or mediums of exchange. And there's a lot of, you know, dApps that have been built, but there's no network that's gotten really wide adoption. So there's a lot of interesting theories about the economics of token networks, and nothing that's been scaled up in utilization enough to test those theories, right? So we may be the first or one of the first to get a network with enough practical utilization to see how these token economies really work. And it'll be really interesting because I think we're like at the intersection of economics and AI or cognition, right? Because the economics of the token economy between the AIs and the network, that's part of the thought process of the whole network of AIs, which is really pretty interesting. Like this is very cool, challenging stuff, and we're going to have to adapt a lot of things as we go along. Because we're doing things that have never been done before. On the AI level, on the blockchain level, and on the token economy level, but that's really what makes it fun, right? The space moves so fast, and you can do 5 revolutionary new things every month.
I love it, man. What do you think the biggest use case for AI is? And you know, in your own mind, you know, when you look at all the different use cases, but what's the one that sticks out the most? You're like, if we can do this, you know, this is incredible.
Well, AI is gonna revolutionize every area of human endeavor. So it's kind of like asking in 1980, what are computers going to do, right? Because, I mean, computers are doing everything now, and to pick just one thing is almost hard. I mean, on a personal level, you know, I'm excited about life extension biology because I don't want to die. So, I mean, if we can use AI to solve aging and solve molecular biology, that's nice. You know, intellectually, My oldest son is doing his PhD now on machine learning applied to automatic math theorem. So we're trying to make an AI mathematician. That appeals to me a lot. Like my PhD was in math, and I feel like math has sort of been the key to science and engineering. So if an AI can do math way, way better than a human, you're going to get an AI engineer, an AI scientist. And this goes back to what the mathematician I.J. Goode said in 1965, he said, the first truly intelligent machine will be the last invention humanity has to make, right? And so, that's really what we're after. We're after building an AI that can make better AIs, that can in turn make better AIs, that can in turn make better and better AIs. Automating math is part of that. But, of course, life extension biology will be nice if AI can solve that. Just to make sure that we all live to see this amazing super AI singularity. Although I'm hoping we can advance fast enough, I'll live to see it even before the immortality pill comes out.
Immortality, I love it. So, do you believe in an afterlife? Do you believe in, you know, I guess, you know, superior design or in, you know, intellectual? Do you believe in God or, you know, intelligent design, and that kind of stuff?
I believe that there are many aspects of life, the universe, and everything that we don't know anything about. So, I mean, I think our four-dimensional space-time continuum, as described by physics, is probably a little speck in some much bigger universe. And whether there's some piece of you and me in this much bigger universe, I'd say there's some evidence of that from data on reincarnation and mediumistic seances and stuff. But whether, I mean, none of the So there's weird shit there that we don't understand. I believe that. But I don't believe any of the stories of traditional religions. Like these are some cool insights that are real, mixed up with a lot of ridiculous superstitions and mixed up with, you know, tools of social control that evolved over a long period of time. So I'm pretty sure once we have a superhuman AI, like 20, 50, 100 years from now, however long it is, I mean, that's going to come up with insights into the world that totally blow our mind. I mean, just as much as our view of the world now would blow the mind of a caveman with our knowledge of outer space, quantum physics and optical illusions and so forth. So I think what we know now is a minuscule fragment of what there is to be known. But the stories of religious prophets from thousands of years ago probably are not what the super AI is going to discover, if you ask me.
Gotcha. And so the super AI that, you know, is going to be creating other AIs, do you think it'll ever get to a point where they'll just be like, we don't need humans anymore, other than like batteries?
Of course they won't need humans. And of course we won't be useful as batteries. I mean, I think humans will have two choices. You upload your mind into the superhuman mind matrix and become one with the super AI, or you live happily ever after like the squirrels in the national park, right? I mean, we let the squirrels have their love lives and fight with each other and run around and live and die and breed. And we don't need to be like the potentate of the squirrels in the park, right? And we let that park be there. We don't need those resources that badly, right? So, I mean, I think a super AI is going to be able to get a lot of resources for what it wants to do. The amount of resources humans use is going to be minuscule to it. So I'm not worried about that so much, although there is some irreducible uncertainty there. I'm more worried about what happens with AIs that are sort of almost as smart as humans, but really good at flying killer drones or spying on people or manipulating people's minds through advertising, where these AIs are smart enough to wreak a lot of havoc, but not smart enough to wrest control away from greedy and narrow-minded humans, right? I mean, that's probably more of a worry, because what humans have, we have a lot of general intelligence, but it's all tied to this like reptilian and early mammalian brain, which, you know, seeks social status and greed and so forth. So we've got these primitive animal brains tied with the power to invent technologies and leverage them. And that's probably more dangerous than the super AI that can liberate itself from the animal brain altogether and rewire its own mind as it wishes, right? So I think what we need to do is make sure the first super AI is not controlled by, you know, interests that are either nasty or just very, very selfish and narrow. And that becomes quite subtle, right? And because, I mean, you can't avoid governments and large corporations because that's where so much of the resources is. So you need to leverage, you know, the intellectual and financial firepower in governments and large corporations, but without letting them own everything. And Linux gives a roadmap to that in a way, because the Linux OS is free and open. But so much of the firepower behind growing Linux came from large corporations, IBM, Google, and on and on. All these have used Linux, they've contributed to Linux, but they don't own Linux, right? And so that I think that's similar. What we're trying to do with SingularityNet is have the basic AI infrastructure of the planet be decentralized and controlled and substantially open source. I mean, the whole platform is open source. Not all the AIs need to be open source, but many will be. Now, we have a spinoff project called Singularity Studio, which is a for-profit company, which just builds commercial products for big companies and governments to deliver them the AI they need. And then it gets the deep AI functions from the decentralized network. So it's sort of like Red Hat. Red Hat built commercial Linux systems for big companies, but it bottomed out on open source Linux, right? So I think you can divide things up in a way that lets the, you know, the money and the people and all the data and the power of companies and governments nourish the growth of an open decentralized substrate and benefit from it. Because, I mean, it's not like big companies or governments are all bad. I mean, there are pluses and minuses, but they're doing something now, right? Like without some government right now, both of our houses might get overrun by mercenaries who want to come in and like rape and pillage. And maybe there's better ways to prevent that, but it's a work in progress. And something like a smartphone kind of needs a big company to coordinate putting together all those parts right now. I mean, a better way will probably emerge later. So we need to work with the structures that exist, but we also need to guarantee that the core AI thinking machine functionality is more like Linux or BitTorrent or something. I mean, it's decentralized and and peer-to-peer, and the things that make money and help companies and governments like live on top of that in a separate layer. So there's a lot of pieces to this ecosystem, right? Because then below the AI network, you need a really efficient blockchain layer, which the community is still working on. So, I mean, we need like a whole new tech stack with democracy and decentralization and, you know, sovereignty as core principles. And what's cool is there's a network of different projects that are all working on this now in different parts.
Hey, it all makes sense to me. The only thing that I think people worry about is, you know, if the AI decides to storm the park and make squirrel hats out of all of us. So,
yeah, well, I mean, as long as it's a cool looking squirrel hat, at least we've contributed to something beautiful, right?
I don't want to be a hat, but it's awesome, man. So you were on Joe Rogan. You know, I thought it was awesome. I remember it was like, I don't know, 6 or 7 months ago. And I was like, yes, we finally got somebody, you know, an AI blockchain, you know, on Rogan. That's awesome. And then he started doing this, it was like Storm Area 51 type movement. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Are you part of that?
I clicked yes on Facebook. So yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm going to recruit Sophia. We're going to bring a bunch of robots in there because maybe the robots can communicate with aliens better than people can, right?
I mean, what do you think, man? Do you think that there's aliens there at 51 or just aliens around us?
I mean, I would bet against there being aliens in Area 51, to be honest, but I would just as soon know for sure. I'm pretty sure there are alien intelligences in the universe. And I mean, whether they're have physically voyaged to the planet Earth is a different question, right? There's a pretty strong argument. There's probably aliens out there on other planets. And I mean, anyone who's taken their share of DMT has experienced alien minds in other dimensions besides these ones. But those kinds of aliens probably aren't sitting in Area 51, right? So, I mean, I think there's a hypothesis I have, which is just like a goofball notion, but it could be that once an AI gets to an IQ of like 1,000 or 2,000 or something, you can't really measure IQ that far, but once an AI is several times smarter than human beings, it may just see other forms of intelligence all around us that we're too stupid to notice. Like, I think about when my dog sees me typing at the computer, it has no idea there's software running on some server that I'm manipulating, or even that there's some other guy that I'm video chatting with or something, right? But it's right there, right in front of the dog. It just it thinks I'm sitting there exercising my fingers and guarding my desk or something, right?
So that's awesome.
Maybe a lot like that. Once we get an AI that's much smarter than us, like it will see some form of ambient intelligence, which in fact is right here in front of our faces, and we're not able to comprehend it yet. Because how much can we see that the dog can't see? How much the dog can see that an amoeba can't see, right? So, I mean, we're a very limited form of intelligence. And in the big picture, you can even say, you know, whether we survive past the singularity kind of doesn't matter. We're like one transitional configuration of matter. There were many before us, there will be many after us. But of course, from my position as a human, like I have 4 kids and 1 granddaughter, I don't want their atoms to be repurposed to make additional processing power for the super AI. So we want to make a smooth transition that leads to something far beyond humanity, but in a way that, you know, respects the integrity of humanity as we grow. And this is about, you know, soft tech. It's about sovereignty technology, of which blockchain is a principal aspect, as well as being about AI and, you know, Internet of Things for connecting the AI with all the devices we have. And then, you know, biotech for ensuring that human health continues and flourishes, and also for connecting these AIs to human brains, right? And that's, all these networks are going to be connecting together, human brain networks and device networks and AI software networks. And it's through the integration of all these different networks that we're going to move toward the technological singularity, which is what gave Singularity its name.
Incredible. One of the things you mentioned there too was the AI would be able to see, or possibly be able to see, other life forms or other aliens or something like that. So the first thing I thought of was, you know, Professor X from X-Men. He has the helmet where he can see all the mutants all over the world.
That's an interesting metaphor, but it's going to go way beyond that, because it's not just going to be seeing what's on this planet, right? So I think there's a lot of aspects to reality we're not able to see, but at least we can see far enough to build something smarter than ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Which, like, apes couldn't do. They could evolve into something greater than themselves, but we can engineer something greater than ourselves, which does give us a little more agency over what happens than just evolving into something greater than ourselves.
Gotcha. So what do you think about, like, Facebook entering this arena? I mean, I hear Zuckerberg's going to storm Area 51 to try to find his dad. But what do you think about, Facebook coming into AI and blockchain and everything else?
Facebook coming to blockchain is probably good, right? I mean, it legitimates things. Probably what will happen is, I mean, they'll solve a lot of regulatory problems because they have so much money to pay lawyers, thus paving the way for others to come in, taking advantage of the regulations that they've clarified, right? And then probably Facebook, Libra, assuming it's rolled out, will have some horrible privacy scandal. Everyone will get mad at it, and that will open up the door for some, like, more decentralized and less nasty and pernicious cryptocurrency, right? So, I mean, I'm looking, in a way it's embarrassing, because, I mean, this is what Dash was supposed to be, right? I mean, this is what a lot of cryptos were supposed to be. But, of course, if you're willing to do it in a way that's so centralized, like Facebook is, it's easier. And they have so much more money than Dash or any of these payment token projects. So it's not surprising the combination of more money and a willing to accept centralization, which simplifies some things, would let them get there a little bit before anyone else. But they're not that much ahead. Like, I think there's a number of projects that are within a year or something of getting the scalability needed to have a really decentralized payment token that's fast and cheap. So, yeah, my hope is they're opening up the door, and then other cryptos with a better foundation will come in and leverage. I mean, the thing is, they're second to the game. Like, living in Hong Kong, I see WeChat Pay has been there a long time, right? I mean, how do people in Hong Kong, like Filipinos in Hong Kong, how do they send money to the Philippines? They use WeChat Pay. And maybe they'll start using Facebook Pay instead. But it's always seemed pathetic that they're not using Dash or some other crypto made for that purpose, right? I mean, that's what cryptocurrency was supposed to do, or one of the key applications. Yeah. AI is a little more worrisome, because I think for crypto, these big companies are going to run into regulatory issues, and the privacy issues are just going to be too obvious, right? Whereas for AI, it's a little more behind the scenes, so they can more get away with, like, sucking in everyone's data and building up more and more intelligence. But, I mean, what we need is some brilliant, like, 16-year-old geek from Turkmenistan to build the Facebook killer on top of SingularityNet platform, right? Because, I mean, we're building the AI network that can service the AI engine behind a decentralized and secure and privacy-respecting Facebook. So, I mean, what we need is someone to, you know, do the user interface and customer acquisition for something like that. So, yeah, hopefully, yeah, Between the various crypto projects out there now, including SingularityNet, we're going to get enough infrastructure. It becomes easy for someone to build the Facebook killer on top of a decentralized foundation. Because, I mean, in the end, Facebook kind of sucks anyway. It's just continuing on momentum, right? So it's going to be dethroned by someone. The question will be, like, is that another traditional web service, or is it a decentralized application, which would be far more interesting?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things you talked about there was customer acquisition. I mean, with Facebook, they basically have a pool of around 3 billion people with all the different platforms that they own. So that's really tough to dethrone or to pull them away from something they're used to using every day to something new. So that's where I guess we have to have something that's just better than what they have, that's decentralized.
Look how fast Telegram grew, though. I mean, not as many people as... Why did it grow so fast? They just had cooler stickers on it, I think, right? So, I mean, it doesn't, yes, there's a lot of people on Facebook. On the other hand, people are increasingly fickle as well, and new things can take off quite rapidly. So, I'm not worried that Facebook and Google and so on have people's attention forever, because there's not to, no one has that much loyalty to these things in principle. They just keep using them because they're lazy. And I think people use them less and less. Like, I mean, I'm still on Facebook. I haven't deleted my account because I have too many, like, aunts and uncles on Facebook. I keep track of now and then. But, I don't use it very often, right? So, and I think there's a lot of people in that category. I think that once crypto overcomes its scalability and usability problems, which will happen in the next few years, I mean, then you're going to see a huge flourishing of dApps that will get an awful lot of utilization. I mean, just like, I mean, apps sort of came out of nowhere, right? Like, 1 year, there was no such thing as an app on your smartphone, and then suddenly apps became predominant, right? And I think the same thing can happen with dApps. They just need to be easy to code and easy to use, and they have to be fast and cheap. And I mean, that's involved some tricky computer science problems, but I mean, there's a lot of projects that are now solving these problems.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of incredible technology that just kind of, you know, happens overnight, so to speak. And that's like, how did we ever live without it? And I'm sure something like that, you know, will happen again. What's kind of your thoughts on Bitcoin and, you know, kind of why it's kind of failed as a decentralized, you know, peer-to-peer electronic cash, you know, system that everybody was hoping it would be? You'd kind of talked about Dash, hadn't reached it, and Bitcoin obviously hadn't
on it. On a technical level, Bitcoin is very slow and expensive, right? So I think it's well suited as a kind of replacement for gold rather than a replacement for dollars. I mean, it's reasonably suited as a store of value, high volatility, but I mean, it's an interesting store of value, complementing other stores of value anyway. And, you know, various crypto stable coins can also be interesting as a store of value. I think, it doesn't really have the properties that you'd want for currency. I guess Dash is pushing in that direction. It's just not that large or well-funded a community. I think I've been looking closely at TODA lately, TODA, which is an interesting project, because that uses encryption and privacy technology and Merkle trees in the same core tech as Bitcoin and Ethereum, but it doesn't keep a distributed ledger. And in some ways, that's actually better for payments, because why do I want like a database? I mean, even if it's replicated all over, why do I need all my payments to be in some database that anyone can audit so easily, right? So, I mean, I think what's interesting about TODA is it has decentralized control. It has it's all peer-to-peer. It has secure private transactions. You can use it for payments or messaging or whatever, but it's very scalable because they don't try to maintain the whole distributed ledger. The consensus for any one transaction is sort of formed mostly by other nodes in the local neighborhood of the transacting parties. So there's no mining and there's no distributed ledger. We still have a decentralized peer-to-peer transaction, right? So that's one example of, you know, innovative technology that may scale up in ways we aren't thinking of. So, I mean, of course, Bitcoin was revolutionary and amazing technically for its time, and now it looks like it will maintain ongoing value as sort of a gold-type long-term store of value. Like, I mean, I've never sold any of the Bitcoin I have. I mean, I'll just leave it sit there. I have reasonable faith it's going to keep appreciating in value. But technology has advanced a long time since Bitcoin was created, and even since Ethereum was created, right? So, I think it's a very, very fast-moving space, and we're going to see Tona mature, and we're going to see a bunch of other tools that are much more scalable and streamlined for different applications than what we have now. I mean, this is even though like ICOs boomed and busted and prices of things have gone up and down, there's a flourishing community of developers who were never in it for the token price anyway, and who are building a lot of amazing stuff. I mean, this stuff, it's just hard computer science and software engineering, and there's money and privacy involved, which means you have to be really careful and test everything thoroughly. So these things are coming along more slowly than we would like because we've gotten incredibly impatient. But I mean, if you think about it, how long has it been since Ethereum was launched? How much progress has there been since that launch? It's very impressive. Like, how much happened in like 5 years back in the 1700s? Very, very little technologically, right? So, I mean, we're actually moving very fast with blockchain technology, even though people are so jaded with such a need for speed that they're sometimes disappointed with the progress.
No, you hit the nail on the head there. Nobody's got patience anymore, but it's really incredible how far we've come as a civilization. I mean, thousands of years, we're basically, wagons and horses. And in the past 100 years, we've got, jets and freaking, Lamborghinis and blockchain and all this kind of stuff. So there seems to be.
Right. And then people are pissed. They're like, what? It'll take another year to make Ethereum scale? That's forever, right? And of course, I understand, because that particular thing pissed me off too and made me start evaluating, alternatives.
Like I tell people all the time, blockchain is hard.
Yeah.
It is hard, man.
But building the internet was hard, and building a smartphone was hard. I mean,
Look how long it took to build the internet, yeah.
Right. And humanity has done a lot of hard things, but each of them took, well-organized teams of brilliant technical people, years of effort. I mean, how many man years of effort went into Microsoft Word, right? I mean, that's been under development for so long with a large team of super highly paid genius level people. And all it is a word processor, right? So you're trying to build a world computer with much less resources than were spent on Microsoft Word. And it's impressive how rapid the progress is being. But I understand the frustration because there's sort of a technology arms race, right? I mean, the centralized tech companies are just moving really, really fast because these are $1 trillion companies, and they're hiring, the most brilliant engineers in the developed world anyway, and they're racing very fast for the sort of technological world domination. So then you feel a certain fire under your ass, like 5 years. No, we can't wait 5 years to have a really like scalable blockchain technology. We can't wait 5 years to get a distributed version of our general intelligence reasoning engine or something. Because who knows how advanced Google or Facebook is going to be in 5 years? Like even if they're not as advanced as we can become, if their advanced technology has so much market lock-in and is being used by the government to surveil you, I mean, then it's going to make your job harder and harder in terms of developing the whole decentralized AI and technology infrastructure.
Yeah, good things take time, right? And so everybody with this mentality of they need it, they need it now, like I've always told people, you want it bad, you get it bad. The worse you want it, the worse you get it. So it takes a little bit of time to get it done right. And so it's going to be interesting to see where we're going to be in a few years, because I have a feeling the stuff that we think is going to be successful, where our minds are going to be blown, it's not. It's going to be something completely different. And all these different use cases are going to be, shown to us that we had no ideas. And I think it's going to be incredible what comes out of all this in the end.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, again... computers and the internet in 1980 are a good example. Like, I mean, I started to program in late 1970s, and I could see then, like, this was going to take over everything. what order it's going to take over what thing in, like that, that nobody saw, right? And I mean, a more recent example, like GPUs were invented to accelerate video gaming, and no one initially saw they were going to revolutionize scientific computing. Bitcoin mining, then computer vision for surveillance, then scientific computing for, you know, climate simulation and brain simulation. And all these things came out of, you know, a variation of processor that was made to accelerate people's first-person shooter games, right? And things you could have seen that in hindsight, because, I mean, there were, like, similar parallel processors that people were using for these other things. I mean, late 1980s, I worked with a Cray YMP supercomputer, a $10 million computer, and 1,000 processors at once, right? And, you know, we were using that for things in computer vision and for science and for cryptography. That's basically about as powerful as a GPU in your phone is now, but in the late 80s, it was a $10 million computer. We could have looked at that and seen, well, okay, GPU can be used for all the things these earlier GPU-like supercomputers were used for, but people didn't see it at the time, right? So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of things 10 years from now or 5 years from now that we should be seeing now, but we're not, because we're busy and scatterbrained and just focusing on other things.
Like they say, hindsight is 20/20, right? So it'll all make sense to us in 5 years. Like, oh yeah, I should have seen that coming, but you know, didn't. So what's some people in the space that you respect? You know, there's some people out there that, you know, maybe you follow them, you listen to them, you respect their opinions. Maybe they help kind of guide your own stuff like that.
I'm in the crypto space. Often gets on my nerves, to be honest.
Too tribal.
I've been studying the TODA network lately, and Tufi Saliba from TODA network, because that's just seems like the most interesting way to make messaging and payment scale without a distributed ledger. And that's interesting technology for sure. And Vlad Zamfir from Casper, that I think he's a very interesting sort of diverse thinker spanning blockchain and economics. And I think, I'm not sure what they're doing is going to be the answer or not, but within the efforts in the Ethereum universe, those Casper and Vlad's efforts are quite cool. And his thoughts on economics and everything and so on are at least interesting, even if I don't always agree. That there's a fairly obscure blockchain project from Novosibirsk, Siberia, called Kirik, K-I-R-I-K. And Vitaly Kumarov, the guys behind that. That's quite interesting. What they're looking at is sort of domain-specific languages for smart contracts where you can use logic to, like, formally verify the contracts are doing what they said they would do. And I think this is going to be important. Like, one of the weaknesses of Solidity, Ethereum smart contracting language, and I've argued with Vitalik Buterin and Vlad Zamfir about this. I mean, one of the weaknesses there is, I mean, Solidity is a Turing-complete language, so you can program anything computable in it. And, I mean, that's all right, but it's not needed for most applications, right? I mean, most smart contracts are very, very simple things. And if you give programmers a lot of rope, most of them will hang themselves. So I think it's interesting to look at, you know, a series of more limited languages. So if you really need a Turing-complete language, you can use one. But if you just need a simpler language, you just use that simpler dialect and language for your smart contract. And then you can use formal verification to prove that it can't be hacked and it doesn't have any weird, undesired properties. And I think that's going to be highly valuable, particularly when you move to smart contracts that are mostly being written by AIs, which is going to happen. Because then if you can't even understand the smart contract because it's complicated in some weird way that the AI came up with, you'd at least like to know it can be proved to fulfill the spec that you gave it, right? But that's just a few examples. I mean, sure. The thing is, there's an insane number of brilliant people doing really, really interesting things in the space. And Yeah, they're not necessarily correlated with the people who are most famous in the space, but at least there is a lot of technical depth there.
Yeah, I mean, usually some of the greatest, you know, thought leaders are some of the ones that are the most quiet. They're the ones that maybe aren't as prominent. They don't have, you know, that that limelight appeal where, you know, they're out there just trying to, you know, be in front of everybody all the time.
So. You know, they're not going to court trying to falsely prove their Satoshi, right?
There is that too, right? Yeah. Awesome. And what's a book that you've read? Something that's, you know, kind of helped shape your life that you recommend other people?
Oh, a book that I would recommend to other people. Let's see. You know, a book I read in 1971 or two was called The Prometheus Project by Gerald Feinberg. And this book completely foresaw the singularity. So it's really interesting to see how this looked at that point in time, right? I mean, the guy was a physicist at Princeton. He foresaw superhuman AI, nanotechnology, and immortality technology. And he said after these were developed in the next few decades, humanity would need to decide whether to develop them for crass commercialism or for you know, consciousness expansion. So it was amazing that, you know, you could see this so clearly back then. Unfortunately, that guy, that book was very influential on me in my early childhood. Then that guy died in like the mid 80s before getting to see this sort of thing actually start coming to pass in reality. There's a book by science fiction novel by Ram Esnam called Nexus. I would recommend to everyone. That's basically about a pill you swallow that modifies your brain so you have like root Linux programming access over your own brain, which is a very, very tempting idea to those of us who are AI geeks, right? I mean, the fact that we don't have root access to our brain is very frustrating and stupid, and we'll view it with amazement later on, right? And Ending Aging by Aubrey de Grey lays out basics of what we know about immortality technology, and that, you know, how to stop the human body from decaying and becoming dysfunctional. Man, you can tell I'm like 52 years old. My mind too. I became a grandpa last year. That was very disturbing.
It's incredible but disturbing. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know. I've got a 19-year-old that's getting married like in a few months, so I could actually be a grandpa in like, I don't know, less than a year.
Well, my oldest is 29. I'm ahead of you. So, yeah, my daughter just got married. Actually, she's 22. I guess she got married to a young computer security hacker in Ethiopia, in Addis Ababa. So that's give me more reasons to visit Ethiopia, which is one of my favorite countries.
It's awesome, and he hacked his way into her heart, I guess, huh? So when you're talking about, you know, you're kind of like all the AI stuff, and you're talking about, you know, kind of like a rip in time, you mentioned DMT, you know, for people that don't know what DMT is that something you've kind of experimented with and kind of opened your mind to other things? I mean, I've heard Rogan talk about it a couple times, and I've had a few friends that have tried it, and I've heard good and bad things. What's kind of your experience there?
I mean, yeah, DMT, dimethyltryptamine, is that's an unusual psychedelic agent. In the, I mean, it's hard to get an effect out of it sometimes. So people can try it and they don't feel anything. On the other hand, when you get a full-on DMT experience, I mean, that's like 15 minutes. You're flat on your back and you're just in a realm occupied by other minds of apparently like infinite intelligence and wisdom and a really weird sense of humor. And you know, you have the feeling like you're absorbing a level of knowledge and a breadth of vision that you never imagined existed and that you can't possibly fit back into your human brain. So you know you won't be able to remember when you become human again. And then, I mean, any more than if you were being downgraded to a dog's brain, level knowledge that you have into that dog brain, right? And then like, boom, you're back, you're in your human brain and body again. And indeed, all you're left with is like a vague inkling that there was some much broader realm with all these beings with much greater intelligence, and that this little world you live in now is a tiny little speck, and you're a complete idiot to take anything in it too seriously. So it's a, I read Terrence McKenna and a bunch of other people who wrote about their experiences on these things. When I was a kid, I was heavily influenced by John Lilly, who had a book like Programming and Metaprogramming and the Human Biocomputer. And he spent years of his life, like 8 hours a day, in a sensory deprivation tank on ketamine. He was talking to superhuman aliens almost all his waking hours. And that's, he just came out to like eat shit, sleep, and go back in. Obviously, I haven't made that life choice, right? I mean, I think about it like, yes, this little corner of the broader universe we're in a sense, is minuscule and arbitrary, probably, compared to all the greater forms of mind out there. On the other hand, I mean, just like a dog or a cockroach or a flower has its own beauty and reality, right? So does this human world that we're in. And so, I mean, every scale of complexity in the broader universe has its own meaning and integrity. So, I mean, within this human scale that we're in, we want to work to make this human domain as amazing as we can, and we want to work to maintain, you know, all the life on the planet as well as we can. So, but yeah, I would say the challenge with experiences like DMT or any psychedelic is like, how do you integrate that level of out there insight into everyday life in the world, as opposed to doing like John Lilly and spending 8 hours a day checking out like balls on your back, right? Which I mean, probably good fun. On the other hand, if everyone did that, we would all just die, right? And so you have to think, well, maybe that's not ideal, and this human domain, as limited as it is, should be perfected rather than aborted by everyone escaping it completely.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Is, you know, basically, I mean, if you go to this other place and you see, you know, how far, I guess how more advanced they are there, and then you come back here, what's really the purpose of staying here for an extended period of time when you know that's out there?
Well, because time, as we think of it, is just an artifact of this limited realm of being anyway. I mean, the broader universe beyond our space-time continuum doesn't give a shit about our petty little time axis and its limitations. So I mean, it's not like we're wasting the meta time in the broader macro universe by taking up more time in here in this 4D space time continuum.
So you'll get there one day. So just enjoy it while you're here, right?
It's outside the scope of days and nights and years. And so that's what I think. Talk about the afterlife. I mean, to me, that's, as far as I can tell, is a misdirection. Like, if there's a piece of yourself or your individuality outside this 4D space-time continuum, we have no reason to believe you're impairing that piece of yourself by living 10 billion years or whatever in this space-time continuum. I mean, that's just a mythology that was made up to control people. Like, if you do what I say, you'll go to heaven or something. I mean, there's interesting evidence that our individuality maintains some existence, like at times and places where our physical body isn't. There's really no evidence that, you know, that other aspect of yourself is better off if you die rather than keep living forever. I mean, I'm a pretty evidence-driven person. So, I mean, evidence can be construed broadly. I mean, it could be something that occurs in your mind when you're in an altered state of consciousness, right? But it could be what some crazy Indian guy reports about a reincarnation experience from some other guy's life. But, I think still you want to look at what was actually experienced and reported rather than someone's mythology. Because, see, with AGI, Artificial General Intelligence, I've gone through long enough career. Like, when I started, you couldn't mention building real thinking machines in a university seminar. You'd be laughed out of the room. You couldn't publish a paper on it. And now there's leaders of nations and large corporations putting billions of dollars into this very quest to build thinking machines that was labeled, you know, complete crackpot nonsense when I got my PhD in the late 80s. So, I mean, I've lived long enough to see things go from being totally insane on the margins to being legitimate in the focus of huge amounts of funding. So, I mean, what will be next? Like, no one can say. You can't assume, because something isn't taken seriously now, it will always be on the margins. The thing is, you have to ask which of society's opinions are really based on the evidence and which are biased. Because, I mean, what was the evidence we would never create thinking machines? Well, it was just that we haven't done it yet, right? But, I mean, the AI field has been around since 1930s to 1960s, depending on where you count. And it was really, in the 80s, it had been around a few decades. And it was amazing the progress that had been made that long to say, because we haven't made a thinking machine in 3 or 4 decades, we're never going to do it. It's just... It's silly. And the same with blockchain. People saying, well, it doesn't scale yet after like 5 or 9 years of effort or something, then it's never going to. Very, very silly. But the same applies to these more out there things, right? Like we say, well, how can there be a scientific theory for these phenomena of apparent reincarnation, or for what people see when they're in this, that altered state of consciousness? I mean, we don't have a science understanding of that now. We may well in 20 years. You got to remember, a few hundred years ago, what was off the earth was like angels and supernatural shit. And now we take for granted we can fly up there, and it's part of the universe. We can understand
satellites and shuttles and all kinds of stuff, right? Not just birds.
Right, and that may well be where most of the AIs live. I mean, our current computers run better when super cooled, so they'll be very happy in outer space.
Yeah, I've seen them put them in the ocean, so they've got them in the ocean to cool them down, so maybe now in space. But as far as you know, some of the other things we touched on, just you know, normally I just ask a couple last questions, and one of the things we talked about, you know, is kind of like these different dimensions and whatnot. What do you think about time travel? You think that's possible in the future? You think it's possible now? And if so, when would you want to, if you could go forward or back in time, when would you go and why?
Well, there's something called the Novikov consistency condition, which suggests that in the kind of universe we're in now, you can probably do whatever kinds of time travel won't cause, you know, logical contradictions in the universe, right? And that if that holds, that would place certain restrictions on, like, going back in time to murder your grandparents before they, like, gave birth to your parents or something. I'm not going to rule anything out, right? Because we're extremely ignorant. But if we take for granted that we live in a sort of logically coherent subset of the broader universe, then whatever time travel could be done would have to be consistent with that, which could be quite limiting in backwards time travel, right? I mean, for anyone listening who's really into geeky stuff, though, in the book Quantum Computing Since Democritus by Scott Aronson, he has a chapter giving like a detailed computer science analysis of how fast would different algorithms run if you ran them on a computer that could send it data back in time. So there's there is serious science in investigation of how that might work, and in contexts where it was all like logically consistent and coherent. So it is thinkable. It could be like you could accelerate some computing algorithms by like making some weird black hole thing where you could have information going backward in time over and over again in that weird black hole type computer. So if you could mind up, load yourself into one of those computers, it could be quite interesting. Right.
Huh? Yeah, I find it fascinating. You know, it's one of those things, the more you know them, the more you don't know, right? And so there's all these different people talking about different things, and you know, time travel's just always been kind of, you know, intriguing to me, the butterfly effect, if people can do it. Typically you see movies of things in the past, right, that, you know, were outlandish that now are something that we do every day. So you've seen plenty of movies about time travel, and so it's one of those things that I'm always wondering is, well, is it real?
Well, yeah, in general, I'm more interested in the future than the past. So, I mean, if I'm not going to be lucky enough to live till the singularity, I'll fast forward to the singularity, right? I mean, that would be the obvious thing. I mean, of course, as a music fan, it'd be really cool just to go back and like catch Jimi Hendrix, Django Reinhardt, like John Coltrane, Mozart, Paganini, right? I mean, that would you could certainly spend a year seeing awesome concerts of many decades past. I mean, going like a Tyrannosaurus riding would be fun. There's a lot of fun you could add going back in time, but in the end, you know, if we create a technological singularity, we can build virtual worlds that replicate all past states of the Earth and a lot of other more interesting things, which would make the future far, far more interesting than the past, really.
Got that right. Well, Ben, I know it's late there. It's after midnight for you, so we better let you get back to either A, going back to bed, or programming. So I appreciate, you know, letting us, you know, peek into your brilliant mind and all the cool things that you're doing for, you know, basically the community, the world. It's impressive stuff, man, and we're definitely, you know, rooting you on. So we'll post the links for you and make sure that people know where to find you.
Thanks a lot. No, this is a fun conversation. So yeah, thanks for having me on the Crypto Beatles. It's been great.
Anytime, brother. We'll have to do it again sometime. So God bless. Catch you on the next one. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Huge thanks to Ben. I really appreciate you letting us pick your brain so we can kind of see through your eyes, so to speak, of what's to come in the future for AGI, AI, and whether, you know, Cyber9 is going to take over the world and all that kind of cool stuff, right? So just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beatles shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beatles and his guests. Robert Beatles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of Trading View Sessions, Crypto Beatles on YouTube, and on several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beatles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right. God bless you. Love you. Till the next one. Talk to you soon.